100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Timber Ninja Outdoors, the Mountain Buck Q&A edition. So coming back on this week, the way out these episodes work, these are different than the traditional weekly episode where I get a guest on and I interview them, we have conversations. This is just me solo answering questions that you guys have submitted to me about specific questions and or topics, and I try to keep them in a short 10 to 20 minute answer to be able to have a bite-sized bit of information based on my experience to get you through your drive to work or to your hunting spot or whatever you're doing there. So if you have any questions that you would like to submit, please send them to my email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. Put Mountain Buck Q&A in the title of the email there, so I know what emails they are. I can categorize them and be able to get through these questions. But anyways, I have some questions here that there's two questions here that I'm going to answer. And one of them comes in from Jason. Jason wrote in, last season, I was able to arrow a post-rut buck during the New York firearm season. I accessed the area I was hunting from the opposite side of the mountain and came in from the top. After these mature bucks get firearm season pressure from the bottoms, where all the access is, does it make more sense to plan for an unconventional access in the late season with a good acorn and beech nut crop this year? It seems like I should just plan on skipping the bottom third altogether. So to answer this one first, I love this question, and I love the example that you gave here, Jason, because it sounds like you have it, you know, figured out, or at least what I would think would be figured out from that side, and it's actually what I use have been using this firearm season here in PA is being able to look at where that pressure is coming from, and I've always struggled in the first few days of a firearm season or anything, as you're trying to figure out, especially areas that I don't have a lot of history with during firearm season, as far as where is the pressure coming from, you know, look at maps and try to figure it out. And you can get a pretty good idea, but until you're there and see it for yourself, it's tough to be able to know. But one just hear this at the end of the, so this podcast is going to come out here a little bit after gun season and PA ends. But one thing that is fresh on my mind that relates to this question here is there was two different spots that I was hunting, and both of these spots I didn't spend any time in during archery season. One of them, I had a picture of a really big buck on a neighboring ridge during the middle of the rut, and knew that buck probably wasn't coming from that area, but he was looking for does, so I was trying to figure out where it lived at. And when I got into this spot, it was just absolutely crazy with hunting pressure from tree stands to trail cameras to everything else. But the sign was there, and actually the hunting pressure and the way the cameras were set up told me that there was a big buck in there, and And looking at it, the way that it's set up, this was a different spot where it was top access. And the only way to access is from the top is coming across, and everybody was set up looking like they're walking in the same direction, doing the same things. And what I ended up doing was coming in a little bit different. I had to start on the top, but I basically dropped right down over the hill in the mornings. And while the thermals are still pulling down on kind of a north-facing slope, and worked my way down below this thick cover that was lower on the side hill, and then came up from the bottom and would get up on the benches that I wanted to be on. Because at first, when I was coming from the top, I did blow out some deer, but some does that were there, but I wasn't seeing the sign that I was really looking for. But coming up from the bottom, I started finding a lot more sign of deer that are in there, and actually and started finding some buck tracks and everything there. And I think that at the time of recording this, I haven't went through and executed that plan yet, but I think that I could get into some deer, some bucks, by coming in from a different access. So I was just thinking about that. And the other example that I have from here recently was an area that I haven't ran a camera in there in 2 years, but I used to, and all of the data that I had were bucks lived in this particular spot. I think I might have actually even talked about it on a previous Q&A that I was planning on checking this area out, and I did. I went in there and found, I saw four bucks the first day coming in right next to this big scrape that I had found, and just coming along, passed on a small 9-point younger deer and another smaller buck. And then there was a big one there with it, but the third deer had seen me and I was just sitting on the ground and I was only 40 yards from them, and they took off and I didn't have a shot in the cover. But nonetheless, this spot was a place where I didn't find out until the next day, which was Saturday, that there was a ton of pressure, but not particularly at that specific location on the top, because you had to drop down a valley and come up the other side and then work down this ridge. And it was a little bit tougher to get to, but there was people driving some of the thickets near the road or the flat top on the other side, but it was like this little isolated pocket there. So honestly, really the way to answer this question was, have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. I think unconventional access and thinking about it differently is extremely important, especially when there's pressure. And looking at exactly what Jason talked about, is like, where is that pressure coming from? The roads are in the bottom, and they're most likely just thinking of how, you know, a buck or a deer in general, what they're trying to do is just survive. They're trying to survive every single day, and they're probably sitting there on that side hill up high looking down. They can see everybody accessing from the bottom. They skirt up over the top before they even know it, coming from the backside and dropping down over, you know, whether that's you have to wait until the thermal switch or do whatever. It's just thinking of things differently. I don't think there's an exact, you know, rule of thumb or you have to do this in this scenario or anything when it comes to hunting around pressure. It's really just trying to read what is there in front of you and figure out how you can play off of that and have some reasonable assumptions, essentially, to be able to go in and be able to make it happen. And like I said, I've been playing with this a lot here during gun season. Now, I've hunted every day of the gun season, but have a couple hours some days I can hunt, you know, some days I'm able to, there was 2 days I got full days, so I was able to hunt. The rest of them might be 2 hours, might be 4 hours, but kind of mixing in between. And I've just been checking out some different areas and playing around with it and seeing how pressure is impacting these deer. And I think having a little bit of a different access and trying to understand how people are doing it will really help you in those scenarios. And that might throw out places that you would traditionally have hunted during archery season because of that. Or even if there is food down low, then, you know, where Jason's scenario is perfect scenario, the food's up high from the sounds of it and the pressure's coming from the low. So that obviously cancels out that lower spot. But, you know, there's some scenarios where, like I was talking about with the first example, the food was for the most part on top where the pressure is coming from. They're just not going to come out to that in daylight and be able to check that out. So that's really important. Now, another question I got, this one is from Adam. He wrote in, I would like to hear your opinion on how many times you should hunt a specific area and stand, and is it different depending on the type of location, feed area, rut funnels, etc.? And also, how far away do you have to move to consider a different location? Lastly, does your opinion change if you're not seeing deer, blowing multiple deer out, or the area you are hunting, farm country, hill country, etc.? All right, so this one, I've touched on this topic before with guests and everything on, but to try to categorize it and figure out exactly how this works. Now, I don't have, you know, typically I look at it from a, you know, like say a 2 to 4 day window of how long I would hunt a specific area, you know, slash stand. There's a few things there. The wind directions is 100% going to dictate how long I would hunt a specific area, but also, what he mentioned, feed areas, rut funnels, my pressure, blowing deer out, all those things come into it. So to try to answer this question in a way that makes sense, we'll start with the different types of locations. So feeding areas, I am a little bit, I'm less likely to hunt the same tree a lot of times in a row, like as far as 3-4 times in a row, just because I feel like that when you're hunting those feeding areas, especially if it's in the evening and they're coming out, sometimes you won't beat them before it's, you know, when it's still light out and they'll come out in the dark, and trying to get out of there without spooking deer is really difficult. So there's definitely times when I'll blow deer out and it's like, okay, now they're starting to be on to me, and I might only move a few trees, or I might move 100 yards, or I might move 50 yards, but hunting that same tree can be kind of risky, especially if you're blowing deer out in that specific area. Rut funnels, on the other hand, is different. Rut funnels, I could hunt that area for a week straight if I felt confident in it, and not worry even if I am blowing deer out from time to time, because they are travel areas and different bucks are coming through looking for does. I don't worry about that as much as far as how many times I hunt that specific location. If I think it's a good area and I feel confident in it because there's doe groups on either side, or this is the only pinch on this side hill and there's some good cover here, then I'm gonna hunt it quite a bit. And bedding areas, I might bounce around a little bit too. If I'm hunting a scrape on the edge of a bedding area, I'll definitely hunt that for, well, as many days as I would need to if the wind is good and I'm not blowing out deer, because I don't find bucks bedding in the same spot in the big woods, the mountains, or hill country day after day after day, even with good winds. They tend to move a lot. They're a little bit more nomadic. They might only use that bedding area once a week, and it's tough to really throw one sit at it and be like, oh, well, I gave it a chance. So that to me, that spot, I would hunt more, depending on, again, everything really comes down to what impact are you putting on that area and with pressure as far as blowing deer out and everything. As far as coming down to Does your opinion change of not seeing deer? Not really. You know, if it's a feeding area and, you know, I'm hunting on the edge of some oaks or something, or a logging cut, and I can see a little ways and there's some thick cover off to the side, and I'm not seeing them after a couple days in daylight, then I might try to move a little bit. Cause even if the sign's there, maybe they're just not coming out there in daylight, and I need to get a little bit closer to where I think they could potentially be bedding at. And in the time of year, definitely impacts that. Like late season, when food sources are super critical, they may have a little bit more consistent bedding spots. There's not as much foliage on the trees. They only have so many places they can bed versus earlier in the season when there's thicker cover all around and they can be moving around and feeding on different stuff. So that time of the year definitely affects it. And the last thing is, you know, farm country versus hill country, and that 100% changes it, in my opinion. In farm country, you can't, it seems like you, when I've hunted farm country, that I blow out deer more than I do in lower deer density areas in the big woods or just areas with thicker cover. That in farm country, I'm blowing out more deer, especially if you're hunting food sources and you don't have the best entry and egress there. So that becomes a little bit more critical and may not hunt the same spots over and over again and be a little bit more choosy with when I would hunt those areas. But I'm probably not the best person to ask for that, as I don't have as much experience as I'm sure a lot of other people do in farm country. So I hope that helped you out there as far as hunting specific areas and stands. It's very going through the different scenarios with what does the access look like? What kind of pressure am I putting on them? Am I blowing out deer? And what type of setup it is? That will all dictate how I'm doing it. The last thing I will say about, you were talking about, you know, how far do I need to move to consider it a different spot or area? And during the rut this year, I hunted almost 2 weeks in one area. And really throughout that time, there was only a 400 to 500 yard window of where I shifted. And I might have hunted 8 or 9 different trees or 10 different trees during that time frame. Some of them were 20 yards apart. Some of them were 200 yards this way. Some, it all depended on what that wind was doing in that area. But I was really focusing off of some of the same things and the same doe groups, the same travel routes, those things. So again, I hope that helps, and appreciate everybody listening. If you like the podcast, helps you out a little bit, please share it with your friends and family, and give it a rating and review. With that being said, I hope you have a great weekend, and we will see you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.